Next up, we've got an interview with Carl Scrace from Occupy Melbourne, and we talk about the Occupy movement 1 year on from the beginning of the movement and issues around those kind of things, where we've had a lot of the physical spaces have kind of moved on and Occupy has kind of morphed into other kind of things. So we'll talk about the Occupy Melbourne, but also more generally the future of the Occupy movement. I'm joined by Carl Scrace from Occupy Melbourne, and maybe you could start off, Carl, by giving us some updates on Occupy Melbourne 1 year on from the beginning of the Occupy movement.
Yeah, definitely, Nick. It's been a crazy year, and a whole heap of different experiences for new people. I think a lot of people were like me and had never kind of ventured into activism before Occupy. So we've done a lot of things, a couple of court cases. We're currently taking the City of Melbourne to court over their handling of Occupy Melbourne. So it's going to be any time soon that they'll be announced. And there's another case as well where we're prosecuting over a specific incident where a young woman was stripped of her tent that she was wearing, the tent monster incident. But apart from that, we're just getting ready for the one-year anniversary. And that's going to be a pretty big day in Melbourne and around Australia.
Yeah, so maybe you could tell us about the Global Noise event in Melbourne.
Yeah, definitely. So Global Noise came out of the kind of European Real Democracy movement. So they've called for a global action, and it just happened to be on the same date, October 13, which is the anniversary of Occupy in Australia. So there's going to be some form of event in Perth, Brisbane, Sydney, Melbourne, and hopefully the other states as well to kind of celebrate it. And in Australia, we're using the kind of pots and pans revolution that was seen in Iceland and other places like that, that's seen lots of people like take to the streets and just bang pots and pans, trying to make a big kind of sound art event and have some fun with it all.
Okay, sounds good. And maybe you could tell us about asset mapping, the role of asset mapping in terms of planning this event.
Yeah, definitely. Well, we're trying to practice what we preach and have kind of crowdsourced co-creation informing the whole event. So a Sydney guy from the Post Growth Institute is coming down and kind of walking us through some fairly innovative social models for how to kind of co-create together.
Yep.
Yeah, it's going to be great.
Cool. And in terms of the democracy in the movement, you're a part of the organisation or movement Real Democracy Australia, and maybe you'd tell us about that as well?
Yeah, definitely. So the Spanish Real Democracy Movement actually sent out a few people last year to kind of connect into Australia, and they've got a few nodes that they're trying to communicate and spread the movement into Australia from. So these are the guys that came straight after Tahrir Square and kind of started using the direct democracy processes that we saw spread to Occupy. So we just think like real democracy actually explains it a bit more. Occupy was always a process-driven movement, and it was about the way people were communicating together and having a direct experience of democracy. So we just want to create something that the media can't misrepresent and say, no, we are serious, we are pro-democracy, and we want to co-create a better future.
Carl, the Occupy movement in Australia has remained very small. One might even say it's been on the margins, the fringes of society, and yet there's a contradiction involved here, because I remember reading a opinion poll in late October last year by Essential Media Communications that found that 29% of Australians supported the concerns of Occupy and supported the protests. Another 40% said they shared the concerns but didn't necessarily support the protests. So in other words, there was quite a lot of support out there. I mean, what do you think's going on with that? Why does it remain a small movement that perhaps, you know, arguably hasn't captured the public's imagination in Australia?
Yeah, it's a hard one. I mean, it captured my imagination, and something took me over the line to participate in the process, and that's what really got me addicted. Because in the direct democracy processes, you co-create the kind of every step of the movement. And therefore you take ownership of it. So I think it was definitely the kind of police suppression that made it kind of unappealing for people. And it's also stopped us from being able to really participate in the kind of city centres and use those processes and practice those processes of the direct democracy. So, I mean, that's the big hurdle for any movements that are going around, Occupy or anywhere else, is how do we actually still use these spaces, the town centres to come together and work out the world's problems. But how do we do it without being shut down by the forces and the status quo that in power at the moment?
So you mentioned the democratic organisation and decision-making within the Occupy movement, and that's something that's really excited me about the movement in general. I was wondering, in terms of Occupy Melbourne specifically, what sort of decision-making model did you start off with, and have you had to modify that as you've got on throughout the occupation?
Yeah, I mean, that's been like a really exciting part. So we had a few Australians that had actually experienced some of the big general assemblies in Spain. So they brought some of the documents over for Occupy Melbourne. So right from the start, we had some kind of connection into the processes that were being used, and some people that had experienced them and seen the kind of magic involved. There was a constant kind of negotiation by the facilitation team of what that means for Australia to practice these things, and how we can best kind of prepare people in the lead up to participation, because I think a lot of people aren't ready to participate in democracy because we've kind of been trained out of it. So there's some prepping, trying to create safe spaces and talking about feminist theory and post-colonial theory and all this kind of stuff, so that we kind of all acknowledge that we've got our own kind of privileges, especially someone like me who's a white middle class brat that's well educated. I bring a whole heap of baggage to any process, so I have to try and let other people speak.
Yeah, I know that was a concern at Occupy Wall Street, with often, you know, white males like ourselves, I guess, dominating the discussions and that kind of thing, and they had events where it was only women speaking and that kind of thing. So there's been an effort to take those kind of actions at Occupy Melbourne, has there?
Most definitely. I mean, it's always a hard one. But it's something I'm always, and a lot of us, are trying to work a way around. At the Real Democracy site, which is realdemocracyaustralia.org, we'll be releasing a document soon that's all about creating safer spaces, and I think that'll be a kind of really important document for the future.
Carl, and speaking about the Global Noise event earlier, you mentioned, and what I've read about it, it's really part of the idea of it is bringing together various strands from the Indignados movement, the M15 movement, the movement that occupied Syntamos Square in Athens, you know, Tahrir Square, etc. So it's something that is really, it seems to me, there's a conscious effort to move beyond the Occupy framework or the Occupy brand, even if you want to use that kind of terminology. So, I mean, how do you see things developing from here in terms of trying to break out of the Occupy framework, which, again, not wanting to be the naysayer, but perhaps arguably hasn't really worked, that we do actually need to move beyond that Occupy phase into a new a phase?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I think there's a place for Occupy. In some ways, I can see Occupy has been really great at pointing out the faults in the system, and maybe who's responsible for those faults. So the financial institutions are obviously the big one. So they've got a great campaign, Move Your Money, or Move Our Money, I think it is, which is trying to get people to move their money from the big banks into credit cooperatives and all that kind of stuff. So that's really great, I think, about addressing a certain problem in the world, which is the financial systems that kind of stop us from participating properly in democracy. But I think there's also some kind of desire from people who have practiced within this kind of participatory democracy styles to want to have something just that generative and not about necessarily pointing out all the faults in the world, more about co-creating together. And I think there's kind of, yeah, there's two movements going on at the moment. One's about pointing out the problems, and one's about co-creating the solutions.
I actually I couldn't hear the beginning bit, but I think you were talking about legal challenges with Occupy Melbourne.
Yeah.
So I'm just interested in what kind of legal support you've been getting. Have you been getting pro bono legal help with those cases?
Yeah, definitely. It's been really exciting, actually. So we've got Ron Merkel, who's the top QC, who's doing pro bono work for us in the main case.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, it's really exciting to see that process. The convoluted legal process has just also been eye-opening for so many people to kind of see how slow it is.
And
so,
were you approached
going almost a year now.
Sorry to interrupt. Were you approached by Ron Merkel or other lawyers, or did you have to seek that help out?
I'm not too sure about the first case of how it all came about. We've had the Fitzroy Legal Service, which is a fantastic...
I think they've got anarchist roots, actually, when they were founded.
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of great legal services everywhere. So, I mean, they'll be in every state, people that you can connect into. Mm-hmm. And if you think you have had a social injustice done against you, you should reach out to those people. And I think, in the second court case, which is the Tent Monster case, where a young woman decided to wear a tent because they weren't allowed to erect tents.
Yeah, that's right.
She claimed it as clothing, and she ended up being stripped by the police and council. Yep. She's had lots and lots of offers from lawyers around Australia because it's a kind of no-brainer that she'll be able to win that one.
Yeah, yeah. I remember, I think we covered that with our podcast, Progressive Podcast Australia. That was absolutely horrific. And I remember talking to just some ordinary people about it and they were like, well... They didn't even seem to get how it was just a complete no-brainer. These are law students as well.
Yeah.
And everyone just seems to come back to the way that, I don't know, deriding the protesters and seem to ignore the police brutality. So I think it's great that those legal cases are out there, because just in my involvement with Occupy Perth, doing the legal side of things, because I'm a law student, I know we weren't getting that much support from the legal community. So it's good that you guys are getting high-profile people like Ron Merkel to help you out.
Yeah, I mean, and that's a lot what we're doing. We've had a year to organise now and a year to make connections, so we are reaching out to more and more people and more community groups, and hopefully we get to a stage where we are representing a strong cross-section of society.
Yeah, well, that community engagement is so important for the Occupy movement.
And unfortunately there was a lot of ridicule of the Occupy movement, but hopefully with these kind of cases, hopefully the coverage starts changing. But just to finish things up, do you have any websites, campaigns, events or anything you want to let listeners know about?
Yeah, definitely. So just with the hashtag Global Noise, that's where all the action's going down. You can see all the different languages all around the world of people saying that they're going to be getting involved in their 140 characters, so that's really exciting. And just globalnoise.net, I think, is the website for the kind of global, and you can see who's participating in every city across the world and what's going to be happening. So apart from that, realdemocracy.org, realdemocracyaustralia.org is where you can find everything about how to participate in the kind of Australian movement that we've kind of put together so far.
So that was Carl Scrace from Occupy Melbourne. And for those in Perth, you can get involved with the Global Noise event as well, the Global Noise Street Festival on the 13th of October 2012, starting at 6 p.m. For the Occupy Perth anniversary. And they say it'll be occupying public space and making a racket to highlight the corruption of our democracy by greedy leeches like Reinhardt, Twiggy Forrest, Clive Palmer and co, while sending a message of solidarity with allied movements of the 99% the world over.